Hello and welcome to Weird. I'm Amy, a nurse.
And I'm Katie, a science writer.
We are cousins and we have an unhealthy obsession with the bizarre side of science.
This is Weird, the podcast.
We're glad you're listening in today. This is Weird, the podcast, where we take a nosedive into the wacky parts of the world.
We each have an odd science topic that we have researched. So we're actually going to start by flipping a coin to see who presents their topic first. Amy has a digital coin flip that she will now activate.
Okay, here we go. Right. I'm heads, Emerald. I guess.
Oh, yeah, I guess we have to call it.
Okay. I'll be heads. Okay, I'll be heads. Okay. I'm going to call it. Okay, it's heads.
All right, Amy's okay. Up first.
I'm going to be talking about this this tweet that I saw that talked about barn swallows. And apparently barn swallows have, there's variations in like breast feather pigmentation in barn swallows. A lot of them are like light breasted, and then they like have gradient until they're very dark breasted. And apparently the dark breasted males, researchers, there's like a group of researchers that noticed that the darker breasted males mated earlier and more often than some of the lighter breasted males. And this had a lot of like significance into like the physiology and just like the like patterns of like mating of these barn swallows. Also, don't
oh no. Yes, Amy texted me. She was doing some research for this podcast. And Amy, what did you text me?
Oh my God. So literally like so the tweet that I saw, like it basically said like that there was this experiment for this like super sexy dark breasted barn swallow who researchers, they had artificially darkened his breast with a $6 marker. So I then, you know, like wanting to know more about this like experiment, I searched super sexy dark breasted swallow on Google. Do not put that in your Google search.
You're saying that you did not come up with just a treasure trove of peer-reviewed journal articles. It was perhaps a different type of internet search.
Perhaps a different type of video results that
warned was all in my history
forever, and that is not ideal.
Well, it is Weird, the podcast. That's pretty weird.
You know, yeah, it is, you know, I mean, it's weird. So, yeah, so.
So these like, birds, so, you're saying these birds were seen as sexier by the other birds when they were colored. So birds find darker feathers sexier.
Yes.
All right.
So the whole thing was like, it started out because like these researchers, they noticed that like the darker breasted males, like just, they were like more sexy to the female birds. and they like started mating earlier in the season and mated more often. And so like barn swallows, like humans, they are, they're socially monogamous, but sexually promiscuous, which basically means that there's like they're supposed to be monogamous, but you know, like
if they see a super sexy bird,
like they're going to go after that. So they actually did like this experiment, like these researchers did an experiment where they took one swallow, male swallow, and they took a marker and they like drew on this male swallow's breast, and they like darkened his feathers, and then that male swallow went on that season, they followed him, and he went on to get a lot of action.
So that was this season. This was an actual, like they were in the wild, right? Like this wasn't like in a controlled, like this wasn't like bred swallows that were like studied in a controlled controlled environment. This is actually like they colored a bird and then they released him.
Yeah. This was like they did DNA samples of like this particular bird, and then they like colored him and artificially darkened him, and then released him back into his flock, and you know, and then studied the DNA and the you know, like the paternity basically of like the eggs from the flock later on. And they found that normally, outside of, you know, the experiment, normally a lot of these egg broods would have DNA from other males that were not technically like that female's partner. Normally, and like they, you know, like a lot of the eggs, like they would be from that female's partner, but like some of them, some other guys like got in there and like were doing a thing. So then they, you know, they went on to do this experiment where they had this one male who was the super sexy male. And all of the girls wanted to be with him because he had an artificially darkened breast from these researchers coloring with a marker on his feathers.
Does it stay? Like, if it has to be on there for all season, I wonder if, like, do they have to go, like, re-sharpie this wild bird?
That's a really good question. Because, like, I do wonder that as well. I'm like, how, like, I mean, because birds do, like, preen themselves and, like, bathe themselves. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know how long, like, their mating season is either. I mean, maybe it's only a certain part of the year. And so they were,
yeah, maybe it's pretty short.
Yeah.
It was just enough to, you know, and I wonder, because it's like, I'm sure you can only get it so dark with, like, you know, a marker that is commercially available. Like, what if, like, how far could you take it? How dark could you make this bird's feathers? Could you, like, just make an infinitely sexy barn swallow? Yeah.
Can we just dye them in all black? Can we just, like, dunk them in, like, some dye and, like...
Yeah, is it only the breast feathers? Like, that's... They only darken just the chest of the bird.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
And I'm like, if you look up like pictures of like barn swallows, there is a pretty wide range of like light to dark in terms of like their breast feathers. It's just, it's pretty significant, like how various like that darkness can be.
Yeah.
So, and
do birds recognize each other by visuals usually? And for the viewers, Amy has many pet birds, so she's a little bit of a bird expert.
Yes. So, and it was found too that like a lot of these female birds, like there was a lot of other significance that was associated with having a dark breast. Like there's actually like a hierarchy of like dominance within the flock that was associated with like having darker breasts. But birds in general, like they can see colors and they can recognize each other based on colors. Like color is actually a pretty important like distinguishing feature between just like understanding birds in terms of like how they understand each other. So yeah, it was so they took these researchers, like they took these birds and they like colored their feathers like artificially, and then and then these like dark breasted males, like they got all of the action for the season. Mm-hmm. And they found that like basically the whole, you know, like the female that was associated with the artificially dark breasted male, all of her eggs were genetically compatible with that male for that season. Because she ended up not being promiscuous that year. She didn't feel the need to do that. She had the most dark breasted, you know, sexy male.
She didn't need to look around. She didn't need to shop around the barn. So did you mention that there were multiple parts of the study, that one, they darkened multiple males, and then another one, they made that super sexy bird, were they? Is that what you're explaining? Yeah. Or?
So, So they started out with like the one super sexy male in the one study. And then there was a secondary study that they darkened the breasts of multiple males. And then they analyzed the like the hormone levels within those males. And they found that in the 30 males that were darkened, testosterone rose 36% within the first week of their breasts being artificially darkened. And it was during a time of the season when testosterone levels would normally fall, because they saw in the 33 males in the flock that were not darkened, their testosterone dropped by half.
Wow. That's so, doubly significant. So
yeah,
that's like a huge, like massive difference.
Yeah. So not only did it rise when it's supposed to fall, but it, you know, just having this darkened exterior, it increased their levels when it normally it would have decreased, which, it's just really interesting. It's really weird.
That's just really weird.
Really weird.
And when they darkened multiple males, were they all darkened the same, or was it like on a spectrum to see like which, like how dark it? Because I wonder. I mean, maybe that's just future. Maybe we should reach out to the researcher and ask if what's the future of these studies. I feel like there's kind of endless possibilities. Like, can you make some of them be just a little bit darkened, some of them be way more darkened, or like, what if you used other colors? Like, would that create a brand new thing that the female birds had never seen before? Ooh. Like, I feel like this study, you could just keep going.
Yeah.
With this, you know?
Well, and it also, it kind of it implies things, I think, like for humans too, you know, like it made me wonder does that happen with humans? If we feel sexier, like, can we change our hormone levels? Like, just,
yeah, like,
by, you know, feeling better about ourselves? Because, like, that was really, like, the conclusion of the study was, like, why does this physiologic, you know, change happen where, you know, like, all they're really doing is changing the color of their feathers? And how does that change like the actual hormones of the bird? And I mean, the conclusion was really like, do the birds feel better about themselves because they feel prettier, or they're like, or the females are more attracted to them, and so they're like, their egos are boosted?
Yeah, they're just getting constant positive feedback that they're wanted from the other,
that they're pretty.
Yeah, did before that they started getting like more female attention, like did the male swallows know? Like, yeah, do they look down at their little bird chests and know? Yeah. Like, I don't know, how far could a bird or is it just themselves? Although what you said was, it's not necessarily that male got more action, it's that his female mate did not cheat on him.
Like, yes,
that's more of it than he didn't necessarily get around. He just, his partners were more loyal.
Yeah. Well, or just were willing to have more sex with him more of the time.
Right. So interesting. Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like you would think that it would be the opposite, that like is it a flock? Barn swallows, is that the official term? Would, you know, that it would be, it would make the male, you know, go to more partners, but instead it's securing basically the loyalty. That's very sweet.
I know, right?
That's very cute.
Yeah. The other theory was that that like other males look at darker breasted males as being like higher in the hierarchy, like and so then they like didn't encroach upon their females because they it was like a no-no.
Yeah.
Just socially. So but yeah, they never really, it doesn't seem to me like any of the studies that I read, like that they really came to a really solid conclusion about like why that happens. It just
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I feel like there's just a lot more possibility
Yeah.
for this type of work.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could probably repeat this study with other species of birds that maybe find other certain types of physical traits attractive, you know, and I'm sure it's different. And that's what's so interesting. It's like sometimes I think about that with humans. It's like, oh, we put this specific amount color or thing, you know, by our eye and oh, that's attractive. Or oh, like this type of tattoo in this one spot, you know, and different species are probably are like, what, well, what's the significance of putting it there versus here? And like, why do we put pink on our lips and not in the middle of our forehead? But yet now, and if, you know, like that's interesting that each species, that this specific species of bird finds something, you know, very specific attractive. And I bet if you were to do this in other different, either bird or other types of animals, there would be very unique things that you could alter
Yeah,
and then study what would happen.
and it might not be like a totally conscious like attraction thing, like, oh, like that woman put gold on her eyelids and now I think she's pretty. But you know, like I mean, it might be like a totally like involuntary like physiologic response to us feeling pretty and
Right.
therefore like putting out different hormones that are, you know, other people can react to now.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the most fascinating thing about the whole study, that it's not just that this male was sexier in the fact that he, you know, like visually looked different and had more offspring, but that the actual hormones of both sexes changed, of the male and the
Yeah,
female bird.
so that was actually interesting because they it sounds like they tried to darken the breasts of females as well, and the
Oh.
hormone levels actually dropped in females. Like there was actually this like
Interesting.
reverse correlation for
Oh.
like these darken-breasted females as opposed to darken-breasted males,
Interesting.
which you know, I don't know. I mean, that kind
Like
of
the
yeah. Well, it's yeah, it's very much like, well, like I don't know, maybe darkened breast is associated with being a man in Barnes Swallow world.
And what you're
And
saying is
so
there's sexism even in birds.
you can extrapolate that to a lot of different scenarios because
Yeah.
it does prove that, you know, like when we feel good about ourselves and we feel pretty, that actually changes like who you are physiologically. Like that
Yeah.
changes how you act.
That's so interesting. Yeah, and I, yeah, like not only is that interesting in the fact that we saw it in birds communally, but like, yeah, what does that mean for other species? And then, yeah, we can always relate things back to ourselves. And what does that say about, like, what lessons can we learn? You know, sometimes you just gotta, you, it's in your power. You can, you know, boost your own
Yeah.
confidence by taking a Sharpie and coloring various parts of your
And
body.
coloring in your chest.
Yes. Let's try that.
Yeah, we should all try that to feel better about ourselves.
That's all the confidence I need. Okay, cool. Any other kind of unexpected facts about the study or?
There was a second study that was kind of related to this study
Hmm.
that said, because they did like the darkening of the breast on females and found that hormone levels fell, but they also found in the females that their breasts were darkened. There's a Cornell study that said that oxidative stress was less in females whose breasts were darkened either naturally or artificially,
Oh,
which just felt really weird to
the
me because I was
females.
like, yeah, because like oxidative stress, you know, like oxidation is just like a byproduct of regular like metabolism, and that's like it's a thing that like causes free radicals, and like free radicals are a thing that then cause like DNA degradation and like cancer and things like that. So if you have less oxidative stress, you are less prone to a lot of things like cancer that could kill
Yeah.
you, right? So that's, you know, that's biologically, that's just like a biological advantage. have less oxidative stress. And there was this one study that found that darken-breasted female barn swallows had less oxidative stress, whether it was artificially with a marker or naturally, just like they were born like that, they had less oxidative stress. And so that was like super interesting, because that just doesn't seem like a thing that you would be able to change by feeling good about yourself. Like, you know, like, oh, I just feel great about myself. And now I have like less free radicals like bouncing around in my body. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't seem like a thing that would be controllable, you know, like typically we think of that as something that's genetic.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So
did it have to do with the behavior of the male swallows towards the females, like that they became less stressed, or this is just innate, just oxidative stress from their bodily functioning?
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. I don't know. But yet more windows and doors that need to be open.
I know. This, yeah.
This is
just
so
like, but all these, like these physiologic changes that happen within the bodies of these barn swallows that just, it just has to do with the color of their feathers.
Yeah.
whether it's a natural occurring color or someone colored it in to be that color.
Like, yeah. That's crazy.
The changes are the same.
Did just the females with the darkened feathers become less stressed, or the males too?
The study only talked about the females, so I'm not sure.
Interesting. Yeah, I would love to know more about, like, yeah, was that across the board, or was there something about the female barn swallows? Because typically an animal world, the female is the more drab one, and it doesn't quite matter as much what their colors are and what their appearance are. And in the bird world, it's, you know, I think pretty widely known that the males are usually more colorful, and they're the ones with the different patterns and the bold color. So yeah, it's interesting that they did find that the females that actually had that change with the color. So yeah, that's fascinating too. Interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting that like that both the males and the females somehow responded like physiologically internally to having like lighter versus darker feathered breasts. It didn't necessarily like have to do with genetics, because like it wasn't like always like melanin, like naturally occurring darkness that was affecting the color of the feather. Sometimes it was literally a marker on the outside of their body.
And right.
Both the males and the females had this like very physiologic change within themselves that happened just because their feathers were a different color.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point that you brought up, that it's not like this bird had a certain type of metabolism or certain type of hormone cocktail that made them then darken their feathers as a result of something innate in them, or like the bigger birds weren't darker or something like that. It literally was just the color, just the darkness of the feathers. Again, even if they just colored it in with a Sharpie.
Literally like a light colored bird that was like doing bad, like we could just color them.
Yeah,
just actually, take a marker and just like color in their shit, and now they're doing great.
Yeah, I mean, could that be? Are there implications for rescuing endangered species? You know, like that are low on population numbers, and this is a pretty big. Yeah, it started with just a lowly barn swallow, and now are there certain, like, could we take a very endangered animal and figure out what makes them feel sexy
and
give them that, and then can we rescue endangered animals? Not sponsored.
Yeah, yeah, totally, like not sponsored for Sharpie, but you know, Sharpies saving barn swallows everywhere.
I know, but they'd be lucky if they were sponsored by this study.
I definitely feel like, you know, there's other studies that need to be done about this, just in terms of like people feeling good about themselves and like physiologically how that changes us. There was a study done on humans in 1998 that showed that loyal male sports fans had an increase in testosterone by 20% after their sports team won.
Interesting. Okay.
So, you know, so there, I think there is like some validity to like the fact that like, if you just like feel really good about yourself, if you just like feel good about like what's going on and what's happening, like you actually physiologically can change yourself. There might be some validity to that in other areas.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's possibilities are endless. We can learn so much from studies like this.
From coloring in barn swallows.
Yes. From coloring barn swallows to fixing the human psyche to saving the world. It all started with a Sharpie and a bird. Okay. Cool. Well, I guess I will transition now. From birds to ocean mammals. My topic was one of my favorite animals in the entire world, an animal that some people don't even really believe is real because they are so mythical. They're probably the most mythical of all the animals that exist, and hardly anyone sees them. They're hard to spot. And yes, I'm talking about the narwhal, the unicorn of the sea. So my first little cute fact is their Latin name is Monodon monoceros, which is Latin for one tooth, one horn, which of course then I immediately started singing one tooth, one horn, flying purple people eater. I know, isn't that adorable? And it means in the native indigenous language of Arctic people, it means the one point to the sky, the one who points to the sky. So I thought that was really pretty too. So they're a beautiful animal. Kind of general stats. They can live up to 90 years, so they live a pretty long time. They're up to 18 feet long, weigh about 2,000 to 3,000 pounds, and their tusk, which is not really a tusk, and that is the weird part that I will get to in a minute here, is up to 10 feet long. So it's, you know, they're up to 18 feet long. The tusk is up to 10 feet. So like, it's a big chunk of their length. They're pretty, like, that's a big thing they're like wielding around. And the reason why we should care about them is because obviously they're beautiful and they're adorable, but they live in basically the most sensitive part of the world. They only live in the Arctic Ocean. They don't migrate to warmer waters like a lot of other whales and porpoises do. They live year-round in the Arctic, and they will die if they leave that environment. So,
oh my God.
It's sad, and that's why, you know, when we talk about climate change, we talk about animals, you know, not being able to survive. Like, they are one of us.
Keep all of the oceans really cold, you guys.
We got to stop climate change to save the narwhals. And they can't eat or hunt during like the summer months. They actually eat most of their food during the coldest part of the year in the Arctic, which is obviously very cold, because that's what their food source requires, is those icy waters. And that's when they eat like halibut and different other shrimps and fish and stuff in that area. So they really only eat during the winter. They don't even really eat during the warmer months. So, you know, if the world goes up a couple more degrees, which obviously is looking likely at some point here, you know, the narwhals might be kind of one of the first.
Do your marine recycling. Mammals,
really? Yes, your recycle people.
Your cars, yes.
When you're not using them. care about the narwhals. So so you know, we really should care about them. They're also like a keystone species, which means, you know, they're really like critical for their ecosystem. They're like top of the food chain. You know, without the narwhal in the Arctic, you know, it could really mess up that ecosystem. So they're super important. And yeah, again, they don't migrate at all. Like they live there all the time, and they're really sensitive to like underwater noise and different frequencies. So they're, you know, really could get really negatively impacted by human, you know, intervention, whether direct or indirect. So they're poor little narwhals up there in the Arctic Ocean.
I also hate narwhals. Maybe I'm secretly a narwhal. Yes,
I know. We always talk about how much we hate noise and
just like, yeah,
be quiet.
Narwhals. I feel that.
Get it, narwhals. You know, you just don't want to be too hot. You just need it quiet.
You just want to be like perfect temperature all the time. You want like a quiet, dark place to live. Like, I get it. That's me.
Yep. Get it, narwhals. You and me, narwhals. We're on the same page.
See also, Amy and Katie.
Yeah, see also. So that kind of sets the scene for why, you know, why they're so important, why we should care about them, and why, you know, their lives really matter. So now let's get into why they're so weird. So I think everyone knows that narwhals have, you know, this one giant tusk that jets out of the front of their face. And I think some people know this part, is that it's not a tusk, it's a tooth. But here's the weird part. So it's not just a tooth, it's their left tooth. Yeah, it's not in the center. So if you look at a picture of a narwhal, it is slightly to the left. It is like they're coming out of like where their left front tooth would be. It's their left tooth. They have evolved to, they have two tooth buds, that, you know, and they only have two. A lot of other marine mammals have many more teeth, but they have two, and it's a tooth. So similar to like, let's say, you know, walrus or an elephant or something, you know, has two big tooth tusks, you know, coming out of their mouth. But with narwhals, only the left one grows. And it's specifically the left.
But they still have a right tooth bud?
Yes, like, and it just does not develop unless you are one out of every 500 male narwhals, which have a genetic mutation. So it can happen where they have a mutation where the left and the right are both activated. And so there are two tusked narwhals.
Oh my god.
They are two. They're rare.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, no way. That's crazy.
And it's mostly males, but there are some, and usually, and I guess I should have prefaced this by saying mostly it's the males that have this tooth. So similar to, let's say, you know, certain types of, you know, deer and elk and stuff, like it's only the males that grow those big giant horns. And with elephants, often it's just the males that grow that big giant tusk. The same with narwhals. Only the males develop that really big pronounced tusk, except sometimes the females do. And so every once in a while you get a female with this, you know, male tusk. So actually I think our two topics go quite well together. We're talking about the differences between males and females, and it's a status symbol too. So a narwhal's tusk is used for a lot of different things, but one of the biggest ones is they use it as a status symbol. They use it to sort of like, hey, like I got the biggest tusk here. Like I'm the head of the club, or like I'm the best mate in the pod. So it's, they use it as a way to kind of, establish their social hierarchy.
But so like it's mostly males that have the tusk at all.
Almost exclusively. It's a mutation more like.
So do some narwhals just not have tusks? Like, are they just bald on their front?
Some of them, yeah. If there's a certain mutation, I think that's pretty rare, but they lose them sometimes. So unlike, you know, let's say, again, a deer or an elk, where they will regrow, you know, their antlers from season to season, and they thus will lose them, you know, from season to season. A narwhal, it's a tooth. So just like us, you know, once you lose your teeth, you can't grow. So sadly, a lot of them, you know, because of tooth decay and, you know, the same things that humans experience, they can lose their tusk, and then they're toothless, they're tuskless. So that's sad. And I'm sure that has implications for, you know, their hunting ability and their communication and their like status in the group.
Yeah, and, like, seriously, that's what
state, it's like, take care of your teeth, take care of your tusks.
Seriously, I feel so sad for the tuskless narwhals. Like,
I know, poor narwhals. Like, and yeah, and it is, it's for a lot of things. So that really is a detriment when they lose them. So I mentioned it's just on the left, which is crazy, but it's also a counterclockwise spiral. It's a spiral shape. So it's not just like a, you know, straight tooth that comes out. It's this, it looks like one of those, like, you know, old school lollipops that like twists around like that.
But the unicorn horn.
Yes, exactly. Very fitting. It is for the unicorns of the sea. So it really does, it truly does look like a unicorn horn. But here's the thing, the male, you know, again, usually male narwhals that have that mutation where they grow two, again, it's about one in 500 ish. You'd think that the spiral would go opposite directions, that they would, it would be like a mirror image of each other, the two tusks.
Well, yeah.
But it's not. They both go counterclockwise, both of them.
What?
So they're not symmetrical. Narwhals are very unsymmetrical. So even mutated ones that have two, they're not a mirror image. They always spiral counterclockwise.
Oh, that's so weird. I wonder why that is. Like,
I know, and I couldn't really find anything on that about why that is. There's very little research on narwhals,
and that's all narwhals. Like,
yes,
all
narwhals in counterclockwise. And it's always on the left. If they have one, it's on the left. If they have a mutation that they both get activated, both those teeth buds get activated, rarely, you know, then they have two. But yeah, it's always the left. It's always counterclockwise.
Are there any narwhals that, like, they had two and then their left one, like, got knocked off and now they, like, only have the right one?
Yeah, and I wonder if you can tell, if there's other ones to tell. Yeah, I'm sure there are.
Yeah,
I wonder. Something happened, or, yeah, they got an injury, or...
Yeah, do they think that they're super special, or are they like, oh my god, that guy's a freak?
And actually, I couldn't even find, really, like, the ones with two tusks. Are they, you know, seen as a higher status symbol when they have two, or are they seen kind of like a freak, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it could go either way, where, you know, same thing with humans. Like, sometimes when you have a interesting genetic mutation, people think it's really cool, or people think you're a weirdo.
Yeah.
Is it the same, you know, for better or for worse? You know, hopefully they don't get shamed for their difference and they get celebrated, but...
if any of our listeners have a weird genetic mutation, you should totally contact us, because we will totally be into that. Kate and I
think you're fascinating and amazing.
Yeah.
Please write it. If you have a genetic mutation, please write it. So. And also, if you're a narwhal, especially one with two tusks, please write into the show. We'd love to have you on.
Especially if you're a narwhal.
Maybe, I don't know what a podcast app they listen to, but so it's, again, they're left counterclockwise, and it's also inside out, their tusk. As in, when we think of our teeth, we have the outer hard layer of our tooth, and then on the inside of our tooth is the, you know, the nerves and the softer part of our, you know, the enamel on the outside, and then, like, the dentin and the softer layers in the middle of the tooth. It is opposite for a narwhal. So on the outside of the tooth is actually the softest part, with the nerve endings and the ability to sense. They can sense solidity, temperature, even hormonal changes in the water around them from the other narwhals on the outside of the tooth. And the further you go into the center of the tooth, it gets harder, more like the outside of our teeth that's harder and we can't feel. And it's the inside where the nerves are, it's flipped. It's inside out. So it's their left counterclockwise spiraling inside out tooth.
What?
It's craziness. And there's up to, let's see, 10 million nerve endings in the tooth. And it's bendy. It can flex. It can flex up to a full foot back and forth. So it's like, it's dynamic. So it, like, moves with them. So
that thing can just bend? Like,
yes,
like
it can bend up to a foot back
like
and forth.
Like a fencing sword?
Yeah. Like, and you'd think with that ability to bend, they would be able to, that they would use that for, like, hunting or something. And they do sometimes. So apparently they kind of, like, use it as a little tapper. They, like, kind of surprise the fish that they want to eat, and they just, like, tap it real quick. But that's not the main purpose of the tusk. Mostly it's to sense their surroundings and to use it as, like, a communication or status symbol, or to fight. Like, the males will kind of, like, you know, fence each other a little bit with their tusks.
Oh my god. So not only can they feel everything through their tusk tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they can also, like, oh my god, I can't even imagine how, like, that would feel for someone to, like, touch the inside of my tooth.
Yeah, and actually, so there's a study, one of the very few studies done on this, because, again, there's really very little research about narwhals compared to other species, because they are just way up in they're hard to get to, you know, and they're hard to find because they're under the ice a lot. But in 2014, there was an actual study where they put their tusk, or they, you know, expose the tusk of the narwhal to different concentrations of, like, a high salt versus low salt water and different temperatures. And it changed the heart rate of the narwhal when they changed the salinity of the water that their tusk was touching. So it truly, like, they are intimately tied with what they're feeling through their tusk. So similar to how, let's say, we bite into something too sugary or too cold with our teeth enough to, you know, actually sense it, even though we have obviously our outer layer on the outside that's hard. But, you know, people with cold sensitive teeth like myself, and, you know, you kind of feel it and maybe your heart rate would change a little bit. That happens to narwhals too. So they really are in tune with their surroundings.
That's so crazy. Take
your beak into the world.
Yeah, literally, that's like, seriously, that is like bonkers. I broke off this tooth when I was like 7 or something during a biking accident. And like, they had to do a root canal. And, but I remember like after the tooth broke off and the nerve, I mean, it was just like, it was like a little squishy part of like the nerve that was just like hanging out of this little nub that was hanging out of the broken part of my tooth. And I mean, oh my God, even like my saliva touching it was like, it was so painful. It was like someone was like shocking me electrically, like through this little nub of my nerve of my tooth. It was just like, it just felt like this part that, it just felt like a part that I was like, nobody's supposed to touch that.
That's supposed
like,
to be there.
Right. It's not supposed to be there.
It's an intimate part of my body.
It's supposed to be, it's so intimate. It's like, it's supposed to be protected by my enamel.
Yeah. And actually that's a really good point. Cause like, yes, it's amazing that they can use it to sense all these things around them. But yeah, like, is it painful? Like, you'd think like if our teeth were inside out and our nerves were just constantly exposed. And obviously anyone who's needed a root canal or had, you know, a toothache, like, knows that it's so painful. Like, are they, is it painful for them? I wonder, we need more research on narwhals. I need to know this.
We definitely do, because now knowing that like their outside of their tooth is the inside of our tooth.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I feel so bad for them. Like, that sounds awful.
I know. It must be somewhat more regulated. And but from what I could find, it's not necessarily like exactly like our tooth where it's, you know, just like a layer of, you know, we have a layer of hard and then we have like a layer on the inside. Well, actually, no, I guess we do have many different microscopic holes in our teeth too, because that's what like Sensodyne plugs up when you have sensitive teeth. But I think it's even more pronounced for the narwhal. So as I understand it, there's like lots of holes, you know, microscopic holes on the outside of their spiralized tooth. And that's how, you know, it can get even deeper into the tooth. But the main nerves. So yeah. So again, I think the research is limited here, but like they have the ability to sense things with the outside of their teeth that we do not.
And I mean, very like you brought up like hormone levels, you know, in the water that they can sense. I mean, because like we can't even sense that just like as humans, like through like I don't know what that person's hormone levels are like next to me. Like, that's not a thing that I can sense. The air.
No, and I mean, like how limited do humans have that? Because I feel like, you know, people always talk about that, like, oh, the pheromone, like, oh, buy pheromone perfumes. People, but like, I feel like our human ability to sense that kind of stuff is so low compared to the animal kingdom. Like, not even comparable. But like that was crazy to me. Like, it makes sense that they'd be able to sense like salt, temperature, and pressure. They can sense like how deep, because they dive down pretty deep and can hold their breath for long periods of time, like most marine mammals. And so they can also sense and gauge with that tooth how low they are, what the depth of the water that they're in is, I'm assuming, to gauge, you know, when they'll need more air, or, you know, if they're safe, their body is safe down at that pressure. And that makes sense, because that's like sort of what regular nerves would sense. But the fact that they, and this is kind of debated as I understand it, so, you know, more research is needed, obviously, but yeah, like that they can also sense hormonal and chemical changes. It's like that seems like it would require a different type of, like, an olfactory type of nerve, not just sensation.
That makes me wonder if like their senses, if they have like the other five senses like we do, like, can they smell things and see things and hear things and, you know, feel things through their skin otherwise.
Yeah. Like, because I would guess they probably have very limited feeling through their skin because they do have a blubber layer like most whales have. And actually, they have a higher body fat and blubber layer than most whales. So they have a 50% body fat level. Most whales have between 20 and 30% body fat. So they're fattier, they're more insulated because they never leave the Arctic, and other whales will go, you know, around to different temperatures of water. So they really need the insulation. So they, yeah. So maybe that's why they have to have that such a sensitive, you know, ability to sense their surroundings with that tooth, because, you know, they probably can't feel a ton with their skin because it is so insulated. It has to be so tough to survive Arctic water temperatures, which are massively cold. So. Yeah.
And God, if I just like lived in the Arctic, my skin had to be so tough that I had to like sense things with my left tooth.
I know. Like what a fascinating, so like specific evolution. Like it's
that is bananas.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing about them, so a lot of whales, as you probably have noticed, have a, you know, a dorsal fin, you know, a fin on the center of their back. Mm-hmm. There only a couple do not. One of is the beluga whale, which I think all of us, you know, 90s kids listening to Raffi and beluga whale, know that they do not have that fin on their back, and neither does the narwhal. And that's because these are two very Arctic species of whales, and they are constantly diving underneath the ice layer. So in the Arctic, you know, we get sea ice and it, you know, fluctuates throughout the year. And so it's this thick layer of ice, and it obviously is liquid water underneath that layer of ice, and they are constantly swimming underneath that layer of ice. So they don't want to hit their little finnies. So that's why they don't have a fin on their back, like a humpback whale, for example. That so they also not have that. So they, you know, they don't want to bump their little back fin. They so they just don't have it. They just don't have it. So it's for safety.
It's for safety.
For safety. And that would be, it really is for safety, because they do, unfortunately, this, I guess, here's some of the sad facts about narwhals, is that because they hunt under the ice so much, they sometimes will get, you know, trapped under the ice. If there's something, you know, maybe wrong with their navigational skills, or maybe they're, you know, get lost, or they get scared, again, by maybe like sonar or other human-related noises, or they get disoriented or something like that. They, you know, they really depend on knowing where the gaps in the ice is, you know, in the Arctic, so they can get trapped under there.
Because they're still mammals. So they still have to breathe air at some point.
Yes. And they can hold their breath for, let's see, what did I write down here? About 25 minutes. That's not that long. That's really nothing compared to, again, like blue whales, humpback whales that can, you know, hold it for like 45 minutes, an hour or longer even. You know, 25 minutes is not that long. That's long enough to go down, get a meal, and come back up. So yeah. So unfortunately, you know, if they get disoriented, they can't get trapped under the ice. It's so sad. And they do get hunted too. You know, they've been hunted for their tusk. You know, there's a lot of, you know, similar to elephants getting poached for their tusks. So yeah, they've, you know, over history, you know, different leaders and things. I don't know if this is true, but I read that Queen Elizabeth I is apparently someone who wanted to buy a narwhal tusk and spent £10,000 on a narwhal tusk, equivalent to $2 million today, and had it placed within the crown jewels. I don't know if that's true. They're hunted, so that's, and they're already, you know, living in kind of situations where they live in a very sensitive environment, and that, you know, could go extinct one day because of climate change. And I guess I will say, like, you know, side note, that similar to other whale species in the Arctic by like indigenous peoples, there is some very low amount of hunting that can happen, and it's very regulated and only by, you know, actual native tribal people. And so, you know, that's the only people who should ever be doing that, and obviously not poachers or anything like that. But it, you know, they're very tied into, like, you know, the culture of Arctic, native Arctic people. So that's really cool too. But, you know, they're in trouble in a lot of ways, you know, because of climate, because of, you know, people being louder in the ocean and human technologies making sounds that might disorient them. So,
I mean, you know, just the fact that, like, their most of their existence is underneath the ice layer, And also, they can die underneath the ice layer. Like, just yeah, like a so human.
It's a blessing and a curse, you know, for them.
I mean, that's like, that's horrific and crazy that, like, you know, that's where they spend most of their time. And that's the only way they can exist is being underneath the ice, but also they can die because they can drown.
Yes, I know. And it's so, yeah, it's just like they live in such a sensitive environment, and I don't know if this is true or not either. I couldn't find a ton on like the specifics of their different, you know, living conditions, but I think polar bears are basically like their only predator, and they don't even get, you know, eaten that much, because a polar bear is probably instead going to go for a seal or, you know, something that maybe there's more of, or, you know, that's easier to catch. But so they don't have a lot of natural predators. They are one of the top, you know, predators. They eat the fish and the other smaller creatures. And so, you know, they should be good. Like, they shouldn't be in a situation where they're being threatened. But yeah, like, you know, if we lose the sea ice and we lose their, you know, habitat that they require, like, you know, we could, they could become a mythical, purely mythical creature.
Are there like patches in the ocean that are not just sea ice then? I mean, it's like, and they know where those patches are and they can go there and like breathe.
Yeah, I assume. And again, I couldn't find specifics on that, but similar to other, you know, whale species and different, you know, mammals, I think they can use kind of their own types of sonar and different, you know, they can use their own sounds to sort of navigate where they are, even if they're in the dark or underneath the ice. And so I'm assuming that, yeah, they have to track like wherever they went down, you know, after they got a breath and went down, they would probably have to track like, where is that opening, you know, in the ice? And can I find that same place? Cause yeah, in the dead of winter in the Arctic, you know, a lot of it is totally frozen over, and there are some gaps, but it's frozen, you know, like when you go, and this is a, you know, for another episode, but I've worked with scientists that have studied in the Arctic, and you know, it looks like you're on land in the middle of the winter there, because there's a very thick layer of ice atop the water, and they, you know, the narwhals have to navigate that thick ice layer. Wow, but we need that thick ice layer, because then the world would implode if we did not get sea ice in the Arctic. So we need that. But it's a blessing and a curse for the narwhal, the sea ice. More of a blessing. And we should care about the narwhals, because they need the cold, or they totally will starve or get trapped.
I love that. More ice for the narwhals, but only in specific places.
Yes. Yes, the correct amount of ice that should be there in the winter for the narwhal.
In the winter for the narwhals.
Yes. Just
promoting that.
For narwhals. Let's see. Do I have any other facts that I wrote down here? Oh, they have a very long pregnancy, 14 months long.
Wow.
So, you know, they're not even very quick to reproduce either. They nurse for 20 months. So they're very good, you know, they're good mamas.
And do they have like multiple births, or are they just have like one? They just have one at a time. Mm-hmm.
And they can really only, because of how long they nurse and how long they're pregnant for, they can really only have a calf every like 3 to 4 years or more. So it's, they can't just like spit out babies like a lot of animals can. So, you know, if they start dying off, like it's a long job to make more narwhals. So
that's like a lot of work to make another, even just one more narwhal.
Yeah. Like, and I think a lot of marine mammals are like that, where they don't really have multiple pregnancies, you know, they have long, obviously, you know, a lot of times the larger you are, elephants also have very long pregnancies, but
right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, not only is their environment in danger and they're so vulnerable, but you know, it takes a long time.
Do they have tusks like the tusk teeth when they're born?
No, or they do not. Thankfully. Yes. Similar to most mammals, they are born without their, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Mice probably are born with their teeth like humans. You know, the babies come out, no teeth. They have the teeth buds underneath their gums. So yeah, little baby narwhals.
Baby narwhals.
That would probably
baby
really
narwhals
hurt.
Are naked.
Yes, they have no teeth.
And then, does the tooth have to like? Does it come? Does it have to like protrude like through their lip?
Yeah, it's like, funny because when you look at
a hole.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly because it's a tooth, but if you look at it, it does, it's like surrounded by their sort of outer layer of skin. So it's not really coming out of their mouth per se, you know, it's right above,
right.
Above their kind of upper lip, probably not an actual lip. I don't think they have lips.
All the pictures of narwhals that I've seen, like it's coming like out of their face, out of their lip.
Yeah, so it's a little bit up.
Which makes me wonder. I'm like, so like, do like baby narwhals? Do they have like a
teething pain,
like a preconceived like place where it's supposed to come out?
There's very few pictures of like baby narwhals again because it's like they're so hard to photograph and find and study. And actually, I think I wrote down a fact about that. Too, that there's a National Geographic photographer, Paul Nicklin. And he grew up kind of in the Arctic. So I believe he's like an indigenous member. But he spent 10 years of trying different techniques to finally track them down and take actual good photos of the narwhal. So it took him a full decade to even be able to like take pictures because they're so hard to find. They're under the ice a lot. They're in obviously one of the most remote, hard to travel to areas, you know, to get to. So yeah, it's hard. So we don't have a ton of pictures of narwhals. I wonder if I could find a picture.
I just have all this like baby narwhal. Of baby narwhal pictures because I bet baby narwhals are so cute.
I know. Unfortunately, all the pictures I'm finding are animated. There's lots of drawings of baby narwhals, cute ones.
Yeah,
but there's not a lot. They do not have the tooth that, you know, similar to people. Babies come out no teeth.
Yeah.
I guess sometimes I don't know if you've ever seen a baby with teeth in the hospital, but that happens sometimes.
I have seen pictures. There's also like this condition that you can have when you're born. Well, not that humans. Well, I won't that. That fetuses can have when they're born where like the pregnancy is not viable. And then the cells just like start replicating, but they're actual cells, but they like have no programming for where they're supposed to be. And then it's basically a tumor, okay. But the fetus comes out as like a glob of, like teeth and hair, and it's just like a horrific.
Do you think that happens in narwhals? And what would that look like if a narwhal had it was like a matted mess of like narwhal tusks in a little blob inside of
my God.
Are there narwhal surgeons? If you're a narwhal surgeon, please contact the show.
If you're a narwhal surgeon, can you please contact the show and tell us how you deliver like abnormally shaped narwhals? Narwhal babies.
You have to know.
Them already?
It's a scary place, the Arctic.
Dude, I mean, just under the sea is like crazy. That's our topics for today.
Yep.
Narwhals.
Good.
Narwhals and sexy barn swallows. Don't Google that.
Yes. Google narwhals. Do not Google.
Yeah.
What was the phrase? Narwhals. Sexy.
Sexy dark-breasted swallows.
Yes. Do not Google.
Don't put that in your Google.
Google left Google. Narwhal tusk, though. Definitely Google that.
Yeah. Narwhal tusks. Left narwhal tusk. Those are all okay.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us today on Weird the Podcast.
You can contact us on Instagram at weird.podcast.
You can subscribe to us on YouTube at Weird the Podcast.
Or shoot us an email at thepodcastweird@gmail.com because other people took Weird the Podcast.
Took all the
preferable. So it's thepodcastweird@gmail.
thepodcastweird@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.
It's been weird.
It's been weird. They're going to think we're so weird. Maybe we shouldn't introduce it right now because right. That people are going to be, oh my God, these people are so weird.
Like, what did they just call each other? Do I look like I'm in a dungeon?
But it's weird, and that's fine because like we're weird. The podcast.
It's true. It's in the name.
Okay. I'm-